So this is a poem by the American poet Hannah Gamble called Growing a Bear. Growing a bear, a midnight occupation, the need for which you perhaps first realized when you saw the wrong kind of shadow under your chin. Convex when you expected concave, so now it's clear, you're getting older. Your wife was in the shower and you wanted to step inside and soak her up like you did in college when she said, I'll shower with you, but I'm leaving my underwear on. And you enjoyed her in every way you could enjoy a person with soap. You didn't join your wife in the shower. She's gotten funny about letting you see her shave her legs or wash yourself anywhere. You think she read it somewhere, that letting your husband see you pluck anything, trim anything, apply medicine to anything, will make him feel like he's furniture. It's exactly on cold nights like these that the basement is not as forbidding as it should be, despite the fact that you have to put gloves on in what is part of your own home. Downstairs, a large bathtub, kept for some reason after remodeling. It is there that your bear will be grown, by you, though you have no idea how. Probably wishing is most of it. Fertilizer, chunks of raw stew meat, handfuls of blackberries, two metal rakes and a thick rug make up the rest. Then water. You get an email from a friend late at night saying he can't sleep. You write back, I hope you feel sleepy soon. And think how childish the word sleepy is. And you're a man, older than most of the people you see on television. You haven't even considered how your wife will feel when you finish growing your bear. You could write a letter to her tonight explaining how your life was so lacking in bear. Janet, it's nothing you've done. Clearly, you have no possible way of supplying me with a bear or any of the activities I might be able to enjoy after acquiring the bear. It might just be best to keep the two worlds separate. Janet clearly prefers things to be comfortable and unchallenging. Janet soaks herself up. Janet puts herself to bed, and you just happen to be next to her. You go on your weekly bike ride with Mark and tell him that you've been growing a bear. An 18-wheeler flies by, and he doesn't seem to hear you. Plus, he's focused on the hill. You think about how not all friends know what each other sounds like when struggling and breathing heavy. Past the age of college athletics, most friends don't even know what each other's bodies look like. Flushed, tired, showering, cold. Thank you.
Thank you. Can we have Rosalind Blue, please?
Well, I'm going to do something seasonal, just because I have it in my head. Snail weather. When evening has fallen silent after lashing rains, crawling, squeaking on the concrete, you can hear the snails in the warm, wet night. Slugs on slimy, sliding trails come gliding down the path, writing secret messages into the squishy grass with molecule concoctions. Passing shiny information, directions to the scraps left behind for them to lunch on, slick encrypted tracks that coil on sodden mud. With chemical intelligence, creeping slugs and snails secrete their sleeky pheromones on moist and sleepy soils to leak the yummy news. Harmlessly, the mollusks munch away their harvest of waste. Near blind, you step into the dark and cringe to feel the crunch of fragile fractal shells. With disgust, you raise your shoe to face the sticky goo. The night is getting wetter now, dense drizzle drenching through. Too bad for snail and you. Drawing back into your house like crawlers on the trail, you slip away from slug and rain before a giant animal might crack down on your shell.
Sorry, can we have Ray Hanrahan, please?
This is a poem I wrote a few weeks ago as a kind of an exercise to write a poem about something I do every day. It's called Errant Poem. Moping in a moderate mood, trudging down to the shops, Everything is under a cloud, but I've come prepared. I have both money and an umbrella, my humble way to navigate, amid showers and customers to deal across the counter. I ask the man for papers and tobacco of the finest, coins for goods we make the swap, with the change comes pleasantries. So I bid me home without ado, long strides uphill to home, till I reach my door and in I go, my addiction served once more.
Thanks, Ray. Can we have Mary O'Connell, please?
Thanks, Rob. This is a short poem. I did have a piano which my parents kindly bought for me. And then when we moved house, it had to go, and that was sad. So this is called Piano. When the cover is lifted, keys grin a tobacco-stained smile, waiting for someone to open a melody, ripple arpeggios, loosen the dust-covered chords. Shut down in darkness for years, strung out in silence, its delicate petals crushed by its bulk. It doesn't go quietly. It shivers and moans as its echoing frame is hauled from the wall.
Thanks, mate. Can we have Dan Johnson, please?
Sneakers is a restaurant in Vermont where I go to school in the States. Sneakers at 9:30. We converse about the weekend over countless cups of coffee in the cozy corner booth, buzzing happily about our fleeting Vermont vacation. You sit across from me and politely order pancakes. I'll have the jumpstart number 3, the one with baked cinnamon orchard apples, drizzled with caramel and cream on top of a crispy brown Belgian waffle. Bacon, of course. And oh, I look at you. Is that cinnamon?
Thanks, Dan. Can we have Patricia Walsh, please?
Thank you, Raph. This is called Sound of Flesh Breaking. Take the first step back, and I will lead you the rest of the way. Being of steel will, catalogging miracles to deepen the means to an end. Lesser good, conqueror of the insane. Exposes fraud, deserves wretched loss of the land. Bonfires bite the ground and everything else. Recognition for our loyalty still overdue. Glass ambitions of associates without glares. There is a beauty in atrocity. Navigating rebellion, battling for the moon, sinking at high tide. A bomber crew alights the half-mast, forcing the line of prerequisite for sainthood. Delivered from ourselves, a chestnut worth keeping, humbly bent to the yoke we deserve. Martyrs to a found cause, a treasure keeping, niceties of rednecks calling at all hours. Bombing crew, no job too big or small, care to sink any problem of ascending. Humor otherwise, a reasonable fee. Track record or track about burning, getting used to the smell. A barbed wire university, a people of steel. First light kamikaze, first made mad. Far side of revenge, resurrecting arrogance. a history of sorts, a catalogue of failures. Thank you.
Thanks, Patricia. Can we have Philip's plan, please?
Thank you. So I was talking to Gabriella, if anyone remembers who she is. She was a regular here last year and she comes from Portugal. And she was giving me some poetry advice because rhyming is actually not my greatest skill. So she gave me a theme. It's espolio, which means collection or assets, like tax assets or will assets from Portuguese. And she had her own version of the poem. And I wrote my own, so I'm going to read two of them out, that's okay. My own one and Gabriella's, based on the word espolio. So I hope you enjoy them. And yeah, I tried rhyming. We made a espolio pool of resonating sound. It echoes down chambers and rippled around. In us it altered true patterns and caused rapid, constant patter. Then it stopped. Till I reached out and to repeat the sound, pulling a string and making it rebound. You respond with a more delicate grace, it started with a smile on your face. The past had made the future stagnate, leaving false hopes and fate. But we opened gates, lighting truth, but we are not falling into uncertain caves, but riding on music waves. And this is Gabriella's. The spolium of birds, that in their nest recalls a blackbird engraved in crest of those who seek the battle bird won, and in the shadows that deeply shone, amongst the heart that beats in chest, the battle goes won, and the birds made frost. The soldiers will fall, and the spolium was lost. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Lord. Can we have Cedric Bicol?
Smell of jasmine and coffee in the morning. I will miss it long after I stop missing you. My toxic blue in global warming. Slowly, surely, my undoing. You used to say that I was sweet. Now I'm underappreciated, I guess. Just like a bee on the decline. A track on the deep side, fading. A memory of a dozen melody in a cacophony of scents. Sweat and flowers, shampoo, saliva. I didn't bring your bellflower for honey after hours, returning until your love withers, gone after you came one last time. I will not be waiting. Smell of coffee in the morning. I will miss the jasmine. I will be missing.
Now, the first of a couple of Moffats, we have Michelle Dolly Moffat first.
Thank you. It feels very good to be back among this community. I spent the summer in Germany, in Berlin, and the phrase, don't believe the hype, was in itself a hype that I believed for a while. So I kind of came full circle to, that led me to write this poem. It's called The Exorcism of Skepticism. There's a trip switch for the skeptic in my head, and she flicks up then predicts what's coming next. With her educated guess of a memory, dense dilutes that fruit of the tension between life and death. I'm out of breath. Hers give rise to the fur on my neck. Her lungs have a paper-thin membrane lazily sewn by yourself where she lives. and fresh air is enough for them to burst their parachute of putrid incense, clouds a vile void around your maturing headache, and reverses the pressure inwards. Instead, you sit a swollen skeptic at an art show in which you paid to go, and how the 5 and 10 and 20 euro notes dance around in foreign pockets like I told you so. And all because you let this cryptic witch witness these walls with you. She brews your wonders to the boil that hits the roofs of sewers, and only there will it eventually flow, after coal falling already dead down screaming olive walls. And I don't want to live here, where wonder is redundant and poignance lives in distance and pointless inquisition breeds a fertile depression. In this city of professional escapists raping each other's minds for some insights, facilitated by knights that were stripped from their borders and bookends. And the streets are endless and stretched and their iron flat, with no hills to climb or fall down, so we roam the surface and propel only the weight of ourselves. Is the search in us really for purpose when our score-year surface footprint trail, trotting along maps and train tracks, fails to feed meaning to a malnourished soul? Naturally, next, a race frenetic to the heights of feeling, loving, breathing, shoving pills, liquids, heaving bloodstreams like a welcome tsunami at a still lake, where nothing grows anymore because no one feeds it, and nothing feels new anymore, so we reinvent, until nothing feels reinvented any more than regurgitated, so they're so young to have seen it all. Then upon me it dawns. The paradox of the war between the skeptic and the dreamer is enough to inspire, to write and record. In poetry I will capture her finally. My disdain propels an ink-drenched ode, and after this elegy I will mourn her with clarity, beautifully. And I will again wonder what it is I'm looking at between the parting clouds.
And now we have our second Muffet of the night. We have Nicola Muffet.
I'm trying to figure out which poem to read. I think I'll do this one. I won't do the new one yet because I'm not happy to it. Forget that way. You have a poem and you're just not happy with it yet. It needs just one little tweak. It might take about 100 years.
Yeah.
So this one is okay. This one I wrote in response to a poetry kitchen that was being held in UCC a couple of years ago. It was an aid of penny dinners. So we were commissioned to write a poem about food. Oh dear, unfortunately Dropbox has ended. Kind of screwed once it does that. Hold on a second. Yeah, we're fine. Okay, so this is called Fruit. Wrapping my tongue around the syllables of your name, I lick the salt from their edges, breathe body into their grave letters, and make them dance to my chin. This is the power of my mouth, this cavernous beauty, home for warm hungers, to compel your knees and elbows to bend, to make music with your bones. I'll make you listen. Pull the string to the labyrinth's end, a trail of breadcrumbs to pull myself back from where bodies become blurred. A trail of blood that is your missive. Come, share its feet with me. We'll make a meal of what we want to say. We'll dance around the teacups and tell each other stories, dark stories of the world's beginnings, each tale starring serpents, one whose smooth syllables contained poison, the other whose poison blinded a god. We'll eat of the fruit, and I'll be guilty. I'll be the one who taught you to roll your R's, to put your body where your mouth is, who kissed you where it hurt. It will be me that they nail to the tree. And baubles will appear where my flesh becomes its branches. Lovely gems to give your wife on Christmas morning. Will be two snakes wrapped around each other, because I will offer and you will eat.
Thanks, Nicola. By the way, Trevor Conway has books here. If you want to buy one of his books, you can negotiate your own price with him. He's also told me he's interested in organic produce and fresh honey and stuff like that. So, you know, maybe a bottle of poutine might smooth your way to a book. Anyway, I digress. Can we have Samir Ujefi, please?
Hi. So this is going to be my five-word poem, because I didn't finish it again. And just like Nicola said, I'm not really sure if this is up to snuff, really. Usually I feel like I've kind of sculpted a poem, and this time I feel like I've kind of lashed it together, or like duct-taped it. And yeah, so it's called Green Boots. Green Boots is his name, at least that's what the climbers have dubbed him. He lies unidentified in a cave, frozen in time just below the summit. He is pristine in his brightly coloured mountaineering gear, his eponymous boots and snowsuit, his rigging and tanks of air strewn beside him. In repose he lies on his side, his restful tranquility the perfect disguise, till his silence and stillness gives up the lie. His apparent slumber racks the heart. The thought of him grinds against the others, and splinters, hooks and tendrils snag, and so now and wherever my mind's eye alights, he flutters. All those in queue to attain the peak pass by him. There at the top of the world, his curled in his final pose, curved inward like the bean-shaped form of the fetal human being. A man that has become a landmark. The unknown climber in the green boots. Sleep well, Everest. Sleep well.
Thank you. Can we have Benjamin Walsh, please?
I'm going to read a poem by Egon O'Rahilly from the 16th century, and it's translated by Michael Hartnett. And it's another poet, Donal Ní Twille, wrote a derogatory verse about O'Rahilly, and this is O'Rahilly's answer. I will neatly shave him and clip his nails off, that stooped and snout-nosed snorter, boastful, vicious, thin and pockmarked, our sarcastic stumbler with soles all spotted. From his crown with lice in droves abounding, on putrid mange crowded and clotted, to the feet of the stiff-necked, club-footed trotter, gurgling, flea-bitten and ancient. I'll tear asunder into jagged pieces that fractious, raggedy layabout, useless and warty, a crafty hangman, a worm, decayed and squat and impotent. Verminous, runny-eyed, dirty straw bundle, a rambling rover and a liar, a skinny hunchback, a greasy gulper who swallows garbage down his ravenous gullet. I will chew up the feet of the villainous coward, a forked thing, broken and damaged, and his two hard heels full of chilblains and holes and greasy cavities. Warped fingernails that are made of iron are a cover and shield for his fingers, and two sprained shanks, scalded and broken, are peeling and chapped from singeing. I will peck at his knees, his knotted tendons, to take away his power of walking. His belly hooped over that and hanging, a wide-groined, ruined piss-house, a brutish paunch, greedy and greasy, on the lanky, bogus teacher. A thin, narrow chest, hairy and yellow, eyes of a thief that see dimly. A pot goat's bristles, a back that crushes him, rough, rotten and sallow and pigeon-chested. A dunce and a tramp with a cord for a belt, an old burnt stalk from the seashore, a hateful, tricky pimp, a sulky simpleton, harsh foe of the Irish nobles. Picker as a small potato, hump in a hovel, attacker of the greasy saucepan. A man of scabs and gaunt in rags, a shameless moron, an epileptic. His throat unleashes a gust of breathing that puts in pain and sickens thousands. From his pungent carcass comes halitosis through his maw and his coarse palate. That is Donal, hated by his neighbours, a tramp with no strength to make up a poem. Donal's son, sinister, big-headed, hollow, jealous and grudging, achieving nothing. Stunted, cantankerous, with feet all withered, grotesque, guaranteed to sweat greasily, wily, baneful, quarrelsome, poisonous, a cunning, senile troublemaker. He's like a monkey that suddenly scampers by the side of a wall in anger, or like a rat at a run through a cloister, with strong cats in hue and cry after. O poets of Munster, a curse put him under, this yellow and tawny-skinned miser. Expel him, this poetical prattler. It's clear he wrote on me wildly. It is not becoming for poets ever to listen to songs from a mouth that so roughly composes. It's a shame for the gentry of this proud country to write in praise of his verses and poems. A puny, poor creature, a dried-up appendage, a hungry hangman with mush stuffed in his crooked jaws, a squatter who throws away friends for a trifle, who chanted unawares against me, Aegon.